Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Antler Up Podcast, brought to you by Tethered, the world's best saddle hunting equipment. Check it out over at tetherednation.com. And we have a great one for you all this week. Dimitri and I stopped over to the Honey Hole Game Calls headquarters and sat down with co-owner Andrew Mills. Andrew is a state trooper and a freaking turkey fanatic. Andrew is the co-owner, like I said, to Honey Hole Game Calls. We had him on the podcast like 3 years ago doing episodes in person is always a great time, and this one was no exception. We cover a good bit in this episode, from whitetail, upcoming out-of-state turkey hunts, to covering the basics for what you should be doing now to prepare for turkey season last minute. Those of you that don't go out of state like myself here, I just stay here for turkey hunts mainly. But Andrew is an extremely accomplished turkey hunter, from completing the Grand Slam to trying to complete the U.S. Slam. I think he says in the podcast he's up to 14 or 15 states where he's already killed a bird. So to begin this episode, though, we dive into quickly who Andrew is and what got him really into hunting for turkey. He also has 3 daughters from the ages 7 through 10 that are already very accomplished hunters, from whitetails, trapping, to turkeys. And we asked him about getting his girls involved in the hunting, and then we transition to his planning process for spring gobbler, from e-scouting, boots on the ground, sign, calling, where he finds success a lot of the times, and then to his thoughts on the PA season time frame. And we get into other hunting strategies, stories throughout the podcast, and I'm really looking forward to Andrew finding more success this upcoming spring. And I really encourage you to check out Honey Hole Game Calls when you are looking to add your next mouth call to your turkey vest. Great guys that are involved with this company, and Andrew is a good one, man. So it's always great to support good people, local. So check them out. Also, thanks again for all the support. Best of luck to you out there. get it, make sure you're getting everything dialed up for spring, for turkey, whether you're doing that or getting ready to shoot 3D, all that jazz. So, you know, real quick though, before we dive into this podcast, I wanted to mention a few things regarding some of my favorite gear. And this is an update from last week. And like I mentioned last week, we have two exclusive codes that you could use at America's Best Bowstrings and Shea Butler Knives. And like I mentioned before, Shea is one of my really good friends. He's been making our hats. He's been making custom knives for us the last 3 years. And he just recently released three new blades, recently using the, I think the Whitetail is kind of redone. The Reverence is brand new, and the Hostile knife just came out this past week. So check that out. And if you use code ANTLERUP25, you'll save 25% off those knives. Ridiculous price. So basically, like to your door, it comes out to like just over $200. And also over at America's Best Bowstrings, some of the best strings that we have used from the premium even, which aren't their Platinum Series, but we've been putting Platinum Series strings on our bows for the last 2 years. Plus, I think we've been running them now for 4 years. So great guys, great company, great strings, great product, just really good people. You use code ANTLERUP, you'll save $10 off your order. And then again, we're talking turkey here, and I cannot lead into this episode without talking about the M2 vest from Tethered. They worked with THP on this for the last 2 years, and this M2 vest is extremely modular. Tons of great videos on the variety of ways that you could set this sucker up. And I'm telling you, it is the ultimate run and gun hunting vest. You could use it obviously for turkey, but there you could use it fishing. Check out the Hunting Public podcast that they did with Carl. He covers a bunch of different ways that you could use this, made right here in the USA. So check it out over at tethernation.com. And the last one before we get into this episode, like I said last week, I've been using Exodus trail cameras for the last 3 years, from their Trek to their high-end render. Well, recently they released their budget price one in the Rival, but right now they're offering their trade-up program. This offer is for any existing Exodus customers with registered cameras in their database. So this would include any camera that's been purchased from Exodus for the last 8 years. Their Lift 1, Lift 2s, Trek cameras, they're all fair game for this. So right now you could use code TRADEUP to save 30% on the Exodus Render, Rival Render bundle packages, or even the Rival bundle packages for the remainder of March. So once you place an order, they'll send you a return label for your Exodus camera you'll be trading in. And after it's received, they'll send you your brand new Render or Rival, whichever one you purchase. I did this already in years past. It's awesome. It's great. You know, again, kind of shows their customer service and how much they believe in their product. So check those out over at ExodusOutdoorGear.com. That's all I got, everybody, for you this week. Thanks again so much for all the support. Have a great one. Antler up.
All right. So, hey, we're live. We're down in the Honey Hole Game Call headquarters. Here in central Pennsylvania, not too far down the road from Dimitri and I, and we have Andrew Mills. Andrew, I the horrible job of checking to see when the last time we had you on, but I think you were... Man, you had to be in there like episode 30. And we're on.
It's been a few years.
This will be in like the 160s. So,
oh, wow. Yeah.
So this it's been a while. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Been too long. Every time we would run into each other or something, we'd say, we got to record. And, you know, life and your work's not, you know, the easiest. And, you know, that's why last week when I messaged you and you go, I'm pretty wide open. I was like, hey, great,
let's get it done.
Dimitri has something tomorrow night, and I was hoping when you said you're still free, and I was like, oh, that's all right, because he told me you're still free. So appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Pennsylvania hunters doing all types of stuff, chasing birds, chasing whitetail. We're just in awe checking out all the mounts that you have down here. Just some awesome whitetail, awesome turkey. So 2023 spring is here.
It's here.
Well, it's about to be here. It's probably been here in your mind for the last couple weeks already.
Months.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You ready?
Yeah. I'm going to be hunting here in 12 days.
Okay. What is that first hunt?
I'm going Mississippi.
Okay.
Heading to Mississippi. Yeah. So we'll see what happens. Last time I was there, I didn't have much luck.
Yeah.
So
what has been the toughest state to hunt?
Mississippi.
Okay.
So far that I've been to.
Yeah. Did you end up going to Delaware?
Yeah, that I came close. Did about you? As close as you can come without squeezing the trigger.
Yeah.
And I was only able to hunt for 2 or 3 days, so okay. I didn't get to
yeah
hunt it for a very long time, but it was a tough state as well. Yeah. But I at least got to work at Gobbler there and came very, very close.
Nice. Well, before we dive into the whole turkey and whitetail and just other fun shenanigans, you know, introduce yourself again, I guess, since it's been so long, to some new listeners and everything like that, if they haven't gone back and listened to us ramble on early on. So, you know, tell us who you are, Andrew, where you come from, and, you know, why, you know, you're so passionate about turkeys, I guess.
All right. Yeah. I'm Andrew Mills. I grew up Clearfield County and still reside here, and state trooper and state police here in Pennsylvania, and married with three daughters. They're ages 10, 8, and 7. And I'm just a passionate turkey hunter. I mean, it comes down to I just like to hunt turkey. And I wish I could do it year round, but yeah. So I try to maximize my time whenever it comes to spring. So yeah that's I got into it just at a young age. As soon as I started traveling, I started getting the fever pretty hard.
Yeah.
Now talk about, you know, getting your daughters involved, you know, because I love seeing it just because you most of your posts are, you know, usually of your kids of killing whitetails or turkeys and, you know, and having three daughters, right? You know, you thought they wouldn't even be interested in it. So talk a little bit about your experience of trying to get them involved. And, you know, you do a great job of what I can see is getting them involved and enjoying it and what that process has been like for you.
Well, thanks. I enjoy it. I actually, that's some of the funnest hunts I've ever been on is taking them. I don't push it. I never pushed it on any of them, but they would always be interested. Anytime I'd be out hunting, they would ask to tag along, and I kind of any opportunity I had, I would take them. And eventually, they wanted to start hunting, and they were old enough with this new youth mentored season. Excellent, because we didn't have that option when we were younger. I mean, we had to wait until we were 12 years old, mm-hmm. and. They've all killed gobblers, I think 7. All of them got one at age 7, so it's been amazing. And I think the success has helped them continue, want to keep going. So luckily enough, I try to gauge what day the weather looks best and maximize that opportunity on those days, or when I earlier in the seasons, for turkey season anyway, when I think that turkeys are going to be most responsive to maybe calling.
Because I think, too, like in the deer woods, unless it's the prime rut, we're not hearing anything from deer other than their footsteps rustling the leaves. So as a young kid, like you said, 7, 8, or 9, man, probably hearing a gobble is obviously shooting a turkey is a lot more fun, but hearing that is also pretty awesome.
Yeah. And there's that interaction part with turkey that makes it a little bit more, I don't know. It makes it easier, I think, to keep their attention span.
The engagement for them.
Yeah. They all have deer hunted with me. I know when it comes to deer hunting, if we're not seeing anything within the first hour or so, their attention span's starting to, now with iPads and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I hand them an iPad or my phone and try to keep them there as long as I can, because you have to, I always say you're not going to get one if you go home. I don't push it on them if they want to, if I don't want to ruin it. So.
Well, that's what I think. It's the hard part about, you know, getting the youth involved. I think about watching the couple videos that the Hunting Public have just put out. And I think they're in Mississippi too. I think.
Right now,
but they were hunting with a couple guys that were taking their sons out, and I think and daughters. And you know, the one guy said, you know, sometimes I come out with my kids and you know, do setups that I know that we're probably not going to be successful, because I want to show them that you can't be successful every time. And I think that's a kind of the hard, you know, metric to balance, right? You know, you don't want to just take them out there and say, well, we're going to get something or see something every time, but you don't want to not be successful. And then they kind of lose interest. So, you know, that was a good point where, you know, they kind of had a bigger piece of public or a private land where they can, you know, see him, and, you know, they have better success odds. So that's probably why he's trying to lean them towards the, it's not going to be perfect every time, you know? So I feel like even for us, you know, hunting public ground or in Pennsylvania, where it might be a little bit more difficult, you know, you got to find that kind of balance where you're teaching them how it really is. And, you know, but you want to keep their interest.
I agree. Hey, I mean, you have to keep them, like you said, interested in it. And if you don't, they're not going to want to go, but at the same time, they have to have an understanding that it's not going to happen every time you go out.
Yeah.
I my oldest, she's been getting into archery as well. And, we've had some good hunts, but once the weather starts getting colder, she doesn't want
to
go.
She's like, I'm out.
Yeah. Which is okay by me, because that's usually when
it's the prime time.
Yeah. So, yeah. But, yeah. I'd love for her to go. But
that's awesome, though. Like Dimitri said, you do. I mean, just from the post and, you know, the fact that they want to go year after year for, you know, your oldest wants to continue that and your youngest wants to keep going. It's just, you know, that's a testament. So good job, man.
Thank you. Yeah.
Hopefully we will follow in that right footsteps one day.
It is a blast.
Yeah. I like it. No, man. Well, what about, you know, we obviously Dimitri and I were diehard when it comes to whitetail, and you know, obviously you have honey hole game calls, you know, you're making your own turkey calls, which we'll talk about that. But you know, what is your planning process? Like, we scout, whether it's on our phones all the time, we're out going into the woods, we're talking on the podcast, so that's always on our brain. Like, I'm as green gets when it comes to preparing for turkey season, other than that, making sure I have shotgun shells, my pattern's good, and I'm practicing my mouth calls, right? Yeah. So, like, what is your pre-season yearly routine? Like, what does that look like? Do you even, I mean, I know for you, yes, your turkey's on your brain all the time, but, like, what does that look like for you even during that whitetail season?
Well, I'm usually making calls through the fall still. So I'm usually running calls. And as far as the cell phone, it is e-scout and all that. I'm always on my phone looking at different states and even around here, like different transition areas where there's field or woods and where there's, on a topo where there's, high points looking where I could stand to listen and may possibly hear one in the distance. And constantly, I mean, I drive around looking for turkey in fields, and it's always on my mind. That's where I start, though, is calling, scouting, and looking on my phone mainly.
Like, I'm trying to turn the whitetail brain, my whitetail brain, into like, how could it translate into the turkey woods, right? Like, I remember when we went scouting a couple times before the first day and everything, just to see if we could roost some birds, you know, like, and you just said it, looking at the topo maps, right? Like, we look at, okay, where's that thermal hub? Where were those points where we think bucks could be bedding? Like, what are those key things that you're maybe, like you said, keying in on that let's look here and get in there to scout for some turkeys, maybe find the different scat, you know, making sure the tracks, stuff like that. Is there anything that, you know, someone could key in on, basically?
I like the transition areas.
The transition.
Between field and woods. I also look for ridges.
Okay.
I like to concentrate on high points where I can maybe walk a high point. I always like to be above the gobbler. So that's where I usually tend to focus on. For whatever reason, I seem to go towards rivers a lot. I have a lot of success in river bottoms or creek bottoms, and I usually try to stay to the high side of it. I find myself usually crossing a creek because it seems like they're always on the other side for whatever reason. But like you said, I look for sign as far as scratching. Scratching's huge. If I see fresh scratching, I usually start taking my time in an area, start walking, paying attention to my surroundings, listening as I'm walking, might do some contentment calls, purring and a little bit of clucks and really honing in, because not all the time are they going to be responsive to your yelping and your cutting, especially if there's some hens with them. The hens might be pulling them the other way, but if you can start doing some just contentment calls and ease in to an area where you know they have recently been, there's a good chance that you're going to bump into them.
Yeah.
Well, I know on the last podcast you were talking about preseason scouting and you like to go out and listen for the birds and kind of see where they're at, you know, how early in the season, you know, are you doing that? Are you doing that now? Or, you know, is there a certain time frame? And, you know, when is too early or, you know, I mean, obviously too close isn't too close, but, you know, when are you starting to listen? And when do you think, you know, if you hear that bird, he's going to be in that area come the season? Like, is there a time frame or something you're looking or starting that process?
So I just started last weekend going out. And then, and in the past, this is late for me. Usually I've been out for a couple weeks already. But last weekend was my first weekend. I did hear a gobbler. I was in a newer area that I had never hunted before. Well, I hunted general area, but not in that specific location. But usually I see middle to beginning of April to middle of April is whenever I start seeing the flock starting to scatter. As far as the gobblers are being more territorial, it seems like certain locations I'll go like this time of the year and there'll be several gobblers, and then they start breaking off, or their hens are getting in areas where they want to start, maybe, you know, to start nesting or and doing their thing. But yeah, I scout the whole way up till it's time to start hunting.
Yeah,
I think you just have a, especially the closer you get to the season, I typically see that the gobblers are going to be in that general area, unless something happens as far as predator or hunters or getting spooked a little bit, but maybe not same tree, but same general area.
That's a great question, because that was kind of like where my brain, I think, wanted to go to is there a moment where, we as deer hunters, I'm saying for Dimitri and I basically, and Dimitri loves killing turkeys and has done that plenty of times, where I'm thinking is, you know, like on our Sundays, right? We go out scouting even during the season to find that, where's that buck dropping that sign. Is there a time where you're like, I'm not pushing in there because I don't want to bump that gobbler? Like, does that like happen more often than you think?
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
And I've spooked plenty of gobblers over the years. The older I get, I think the more patient I'm getting. And I usually ease into an area. When I'm scouting, I really try not to bump anything. And usually if I think I'm getting close, I bounce out and go somewhere else, just because it's not worth it to bump that gobbler. Not saying it won't be there tomorrow or who knows, but want to maximize your opportunities when you get to hunt. So
Spartan Forge stands at the nexus of machine learning and whitetail deer hunting to deliver truly intuitive and science-based products that saves the hunter time spent scouting, planning, and executing their hunts. You have deer prediction, journaling, and the best maps on any hunting app platform there is. Use code ANTLERUP to save 20% off your Spartan Forge membership at spartanforge.ai.
Well, and what do you think about the season time frame for Pennsylvania? Yeah. You know, that comes up a lot, you know, when we talk about turkey hunting. And, you know, I feel I'm not a turkey expert like you are, but, you know, I feel like it's late and there's, you know, when it gets into that warmer weather. And I mean, I know we just had snow, you know, I still have a couple inches of snow at my house, and you know, so you never know what you're going to get.
I still love your snowbird kill, man.
Yep.
I still
That was actually in May. We got that snow a couple
years ago.
Yeah. That was like 3 or 4 years ago,
yeah.
You know, but, you know, talk about a little bit of that, just because, you know, obviously you hunt in other states and, you know, so your strategy is going to change and it will probably change a little bit from the early on seasons to the later, or the end of Pennsylvania, because Pennsylvania is probably one of the later states, you know, probably for this area, and how that changes your strategy and, you know, game planning going into the season.
I personally don't mind our season a whole lot. Now, I agree with you. I think it'd be a lot easier to kill gobblers if they brought it in middle of April. But I kind of agree with where the season's at, mainly because I think a lot of the hens are already have been bred and they're starting to nest. So at least we're not taking out gobbler. Like, they're having the opportunity to do their breeding, and then that's where my mindset is, and I could be completely wrong on it. But as far as later in the season, I tend to not call as much, and they're more contentment calls. And earlier in the season, I'm a little bit more aggressive with my calling, and I've been fairly successful with that, being more aggressive at the beginning of the season. But as that season goes on, it seems like, I guess the best way to describe it is a lull period where the gobblers might not be gobbling or being as active vocally. And so I tend to do my contentment, like I was saying, get into an area, and I'll sit a lot longer and be a lot more patient later as the season goes on. Now, if I have one that's being very vocal and gobbling a lot towards me, I'll step it up then, and I try to fill out the gobbler and see how their interaction is with me, and I feed, and I call based off of that interaction. So
yeah,
every instance is a little bit different, but yeah, that's my approach. I think it's better to start out being more contentment, then you can always pick it up. But I think if you start out being real aggressive in your calling, it could cause a gobbler to be a little call shy.
Yeah. What about since you take your daughters out that week prior to our opening day, do you notice anything like in that first week that anything changes amongst the birds? Like does the quote unquote pressure by people going out, like between scouting, looking for that bird for the next week, plus youth hunters going out there, do anything? Have you ever noticed anything like that?
The last couple of years, I mean, youth day has been treated us great. I mean, mm-hmm. a lot of, I'm not saying we're killing any, but we're coming close, or we're getting action. Mm-hmm. But I will say, especially the last 2 years, hunted youth day with my daughters, went back to that same area first day, and there was a total difference. I didn't hear as many gobblers. Now, whether that's because we were in there and working them that week prior, I don't know. Yeah. Or I'm not sure, because I know they're there.
Yeah,
I see them throughout the season. So,
yeah,
I don't know. That could be because of the hunting pressure the week prior, and mm-hmm. people scouting and getting gearing up for the season.
Yeah. That's interesting.
Now, what do you think about, you know, what affects the response of gobblers? You know, obviously, you know, we know pressure and predators is going to kind of throughout the season is going to cause them to be a little bit shyer. You know, that's kind of the easy answer. But do you think, like, you know, we've heard temperature or barometric pressure, you know, what do you think about some of those things that's going to play into, you know, the response, or, you know, hearing a gobbler respond to you or early in the morning?
I think that pressure has a lot to do with it. Okay. It seems to, what's the magic number, above 30 or something like that, with the pressure?
Yeah, barometric pressure, yeah.
I typically see a lot more action, and they're a lot more vocal on those days. But that's not every time. I wouldn't say that. But earlier in the season is whenever I'm hearing my most gobbling. Now, as of recent, I mean, I have my days, like last year towards the end of the season, I was hearing still a fair amount of gobblers, and they were gobbling like it was the beginning of the season. So I don't know. I wish I did know, because those are the days I'd be really taking off work. But yeah, I don't know.
I know. I always, you know, the thing that gets me is you'll hear people about the rain, right? You know, to go or to go. And man, I don't know how many times I've driven home when it's getting close to the season or during the season and it's pouring out,
mm-hmm.
and there's a whole flock of turkey in that field.
Yeah.
You know, like
I always concentrate on the fields when it starts raining.
Yeah.
They tend to always want to go to the fields. And I think that a lot of it's because they can't hear as well for mating purposes and cautious of predators, so they'll get in an open area where they can see. Yeah. I mean, their eyesight's amazing. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When's our Sunday hunting coming for turkey?
I don't think anytime soon.
That was one thing I wish they would do is open Sundays for it. One of the Sundays for the regular season, but for youth, I think that'd be awesome if they'd do a Saturday and Sunday, just the whole weekend for the kids to
should go out.
Yeah, I think that'd be a great opportunity for them, but I don't know if we'll ever see it. But we are seeing more Sundays, you know, yep. So maybe that will be something for the future.
Yeah. I've never, like, we hear about deer, and we got the bear, right? But I've never really heard anybody be like, I want that for my turkey season, too, you know?
No, I just think it depends on if they pass Sunday hunting, you know, in general. Yeah. I mean, I think that's what it's going to come to. Because youth season's just that one Saturday, right? That correct, doesn't carry yeah. into the week at all. Because I think a lot of states do the whole week, right?
Yeah. I mean. Yeah. I when I'm home here in PA, I kind of enjoy having the Sunday off because I'm usually running ragged. It's a day for me to catch up with the family, rest, and get things done around the house. However, I'll say with the amount of traveling I do, whenever I go out of state and you can't hunt a state on a Sunday, that's miserable because you're out there, and it's a day that's just wasted. I mean, you go out and scout and everything, but so I usually try to get to a state where I know I can hunt on a Sunday whenever I'm traveling.
Well, that brings up a great point, like just Sunday hunting in general. And that's, I was actually thinking about this today. Mm-hmm. And that is because I agree with you. There are times where those Sundays are my days, you know, obviously with the family, right? Like your recovery, you're maybe going out scouting. But those days that you could kind of, you know, energize those batteries, basically morning, midday, and then in that evening, you could get out there and hunt, right? Like those are opportunities where for guys like us that work during the week.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know. It could potentially save us so many days, quote unquote sick days or vacation days that, you know, we don't use when that weather is quote unquote the prime time to get out there.
I told Molly, I said, this year you probably won't see me because I'm going to travel to a state where I can go hunt on a Sunday. Yeah. So she's of course thrilled about that.
Yeah. Right.
But I like it, but I also don't like it at the same time. It's this time of the year, I just catch the fever so bad that I want to be hunting every opportunity that I'm off.
Well, I just think if they legalize it, I mean, you're going to play it out how you want to play it out, right? Yeah. You know, if you feel like you're able to go hunting, you're going to go hunting. Oh. If you want to go to church or you want to do family time or, you know, you're going to do family time. I mean, it's just whatever you feel is necessary or what's going to benefit you. So, you know, why hold people back if, you know, they can make those decisions?
Yeah.
And that's the one thing I got. Not every single hunter is going to be out there every Sunday, right? Like you just said, Dimitri, there are going to be times, like you said, I wish they would pass it because I don't know how many times we've said it either on the podcast, not on the podcast. How many times are we looking forward to that Saturday? And then as Friday comes and the weather totally changes and Saturday is just miserable and Sunday's like, my gosh, you can see your breath. You know what I mean? Yeah. It is just the perfect day to be in the woods and you're driving around, you see deer everywhere, right? You see turkey everywhere.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I'm fingers crossed for one day that we could get, you know.
I think it's coming.
Yeah, I do
too. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah. I think so too.
I've heard more people talk about trying to remove like the Saturday opener.
That's a big thing right now.
Right.
I mean, I've read a couple. I think that's one thing that's on the docket, and I forget what the other what they want to do is seniors can have no antler restriction is another thing I think that I saw that they're voting on too. I think that's like the two big things, but I mean again, it almost like the Sunday hunting's kind of being pushed to the wayside.
Yeah,
as I maybe someone knows more than me, but you know that's kind of the couple articles that I've seen.
Yeah,
is the two big things that they're presenting. Because I think they're voting pretty soon, right?
It's usually I'm not sure.
Because the season, I mean, you can buy a license in June. So it's got to be within a month.
Man, I hope they keep the Saturday. I do just for the sole fact that where I work, they don't give off Monday anymore.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's nice for these schools because they get Monday, Tuesday. But where I work, now I'm hoping their main reason was because it's now Saturday.
Right. So if it would switch, maybe.
So if it goes back, it better go back. But my thought process is
once it's changed,
it's not going back.
Yeah. See, I, not for hunting purposes, I like the old tradition of just going to camp and hanging out. I feel rushed, but I could take it or leave it. It doesn't matter to me either way. I guess I'd prefer it be on Monday, but I would just take vacation days for it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So that
not everybody has that option.
Right.
Yep.
You know? And if they would do that, if they would bring it back in Monday, I hope that they will do maybe Saturday, Sunday of the first week and Saturday, Sunday of the second week. Give everybody weekends. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Well, that and being rifle in Pennsylvania is such a hard argument too. You know what I mean? Because like we know how that first day, even like the first hour, 2 hours, how crucial that is for everybody, right? Because you could say, well, if you want to go to camp and hang out, well, why don't you just go to camp? And then when you want to hunt, hunt. But I mean, that's totally different when it comes to rifle.
Yeah, because those deer are moving everywhere.
Yeah, so if you miss that first hour or two, I mean, that's pretty crucial in most places. So, you know, I've never had like the camp, you know, atmosphere where we hang out and do all this like shooting guns and you know what I mean. So I can't speak upon that, but I get it and I understand people have traditions and PA is built on traditions, but you know. So it's hard to make that argument. You either got to, you know, do it on Saturday or Monday and, you know, change your plans accordingly to whatever the date is.
Yeah. I mean, and they talk about it's the businesses and they bring up like that aspect of things. And I get that. Like I do restaurants, but really every tradition that I ever hear is more so these guys going to a camp. Not, hey, we're going to go down and eat at the whatever restaurant down the road. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure restaurants do make money and, you know, somebody's probably, you know, that listen to this is like, well, we go there every year and that's great. But I mean, most people that I hear when they talk about traditions is a hunting camp, right? I'm in the same boat as Dimitri. Like if I were growing up, I just went to my dad's.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. It was, I'd go to my dad's, we'd pack our sandwiches, we'd get up and we would go. And afterwards we'd go to the hut at the club basically. But it wasn't a place where people camped at. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, so again, because I wasn't brought up in that staying over camp feel. So that's why I'm all about keep it Saturday at least, because if you remove that, like Dimitri said, I don't see me getting that day back.
Yeah. That's understandable.
Yeah. Well, you're going out of state here soon. Mm-hmm. What trips do you got lined up this year? You got Mississippi.
Yeah, I'm going to do a
you're going Pacific, out west still?
Yeah, I'm going to go Pacific west. Depending on snow at this point, because they've been getting pounded out there. Yeah. But, I mean, flight's already booked, so I'm going. I just don't know exactly where. Originally, it's Washington and Idaho.
Okay.
We'll see. There's quite a bit of snow.
So Mississippi's in 2 weeks?
Yeah.
Okay. And then one of
they just opened up today. Yeah. I mean, for the their adult season.
Adult season.
Now for their regular season, I guess you could say. But their season's kind of it's a draw now for the first 2 weeks for non-residents. So, and I didn't find out till a couple weeks ago. I did end up drawn, but I had to put in vacation time prior to that. So
yeah,
I'm locked in now for the 28th is whenever you can. Everybody can start hunting.
Okay. What's your game plan?
Game plan is to find a turkey in that state because last time I didn't. I don't know. I have a game plan. I've been e-scouting like we talked about earlier. I'm on my cell phone laying in bed at night just looking at maps trying to figure out where I can find a turkey that no one else is going to be at.
Yeah.
Because that's what I was running into last time a lot too was I did find some turkey. They were actually on private but workable from the public, and there was about a handful of other guys trying to do the same thing that I was doing. Mm-hmm. So
well, and I think the out-of-state game plan, obviously thinking whitetail, right? You know, the term is scout more, hunt less when you're out of state, right? You're trying to find that sign. But with turkeys, I mean, you can kind of hear them from the distance. Yeah, right,
a lot of times.
And so you're basically hunting and scouting at the same time, where you're trying to cover ground and, you know, find that bird, right?
Yeah. I lose a lot of weight in spring. I mean, between not eating is like I should and is the a lot of miles I put on, and depending on the terrain, it can be pretty rough. I'd say I put on about 8 to 10 miles a day when I'm hunting turkey on average.
Boy, I watched that one episode with Ted and Aaron from Ted Shot That Bird in Colorado last year. Like, they just aired it. Man, they were back like, I don't know how many miles, a couple miles, but it was just like you just said, it's just so cool to see in a different state like Colorado to go up somewhere and kill a bird.
That's half of it for me. It's just the scenery.
The adventure.
Being out there, seeing different things, and it's just a different from atmosphere from what we see mm-hmm. around here. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That all plays into it. And yeah. a lot of times, yeah, I like flying to different states because you're there, you maximize your time as to hunting, but it's nice to drive and just get the full experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a unique topic about going out flying totally out west. So,
yeah.
I mean, how do you game plan for that? Because renting a vehicle, mm-hmm. you know, you have to obviously check your luggage with your shotgun, I'm assuming, yeah. and all that stuff. So, like, are you going with somebody?
Yeah, there's two of us going, okay. two other guys going out west, and we're flying. I've found that Southwest is the best airlines for flying with your luggage, because you get two free check bags. One's going to be the rifle case or mm-hmm. the shotgun case. And then I try to jam pack the other one with as much hunting stuff as I can. And then you get a free carry on. Mm-hmm. I've recently been trying to take a camera with me. So I shove that into like a pouch or a satchel, if you will, but just carry it like almost like a purse on the plane, and just to try to, like, I have a vest that I absolutely love, but I probably won't be able to fit it in my bag just because of the room. Mm-hmm. And now I'm thinking, with all the snow they have out there, probably two pairs of boots, one to let dry and the other ones to be wearing the next time. Like, yeah. this all plays into it. So I don't have to get a third bag and pay extra money. It's already expensive as it is anymore. So there's a lot of planning involved with it. Trying yep. to, I cut down on the casual clothes, and it's all camo. Like, I yeah. might be wearing camo to the restaurants or yeah. wherever we eat yeah. the store.
Tethered is a team of saddle hunting fanatics with a passionate addiction to whitetail hunting. Designing and engineering products to be a more efficient and confident hunter, Tethered produces the most mobile, stealthy, and safest elevated hunting gear on the planet. Built by saddle hunters for the saddle hunter. Head over to tetherednation.com to see for yourself what exactly I'm talking about.
What about, like, decoys? Are you taking decoys? Are you, when you're running and gunning, you don't worry about it? You don't think it's necessary?
I don't typically use any. I use them with my daughters because I try to get the focal off us. If I can get that attention on, they can move a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I mean, we have not used them before, only because a quick setup situation or something like that. But when I'm traveling, even whenever I'm driving, I went to Delaware, I didn't use any. It's just, this is what I love doing, is calling and making calls. That's how I want to do it. Yeah. Everybody's different. So, to me, I that's the way I want to do it.
Well, speaking of a run and gun setup, I mean, that's what I would say most listeners kind of have been gravitating to, mm-hmm. right? Is doing that whole run and gun mobile turkey hunting. And you know, what is your setup? Like, you said you have a favorite vest and everything yeah. like that. Like, what are you running?
So I have it's an older vest that Cabela's made. It has a aluminum frame in it, and it has like a kickstand where I love it because I don't have to sit against a tree. And a lot of situations, like, there might be a hemlock tree with, you know, if you're sitting against a hemlock, some tree is moving even though you're not, or a limb's mm-hmm. moving even though you're not moving. Also, if there's a bush, I can sit slightly just in front of that bush where there's enough to break my silhouette, but I can be leaning against and sitting into my vest. And I rely on that thing a lot, but I don't know if I'll be able to take it. Boot setup, I've been wearing those, how do you pronounce, Hanwogs? Mm-hmm. I've been wearing them, and I like them. Them and Crispies, I think, are comparable.
Mm-hmm. Very.
I've been using Mossy Oak, what's the Bottomland
yep.
camo, mm-hmm. mainly. Now, I'm a little concerned. I've actually been looking out west. It seems like a lot of the colors are a little bit lighter. So I've been looking at maybe trying to switch up my camo patterns for out there. Just to, that's also been to my
stuff you don't think, you know what I mean? I mean, we thought, mm-hmm. you know, Fusion, boom, we're out west, right? We're, I mean, obviously Spectre kind of fits that mold as well, but I mean, when you look, or before Spectre came out for First Light for that pure whitetail pattern for them, it was Fusion was western, and you, and you had Decipher was more of that quote unquote eastern, and Fusion worked really well here. That's what you even ran, still run mostly too, but I mean,
I'm still wearing camo from like 12 years ago. Like, I
come on, Andrew. You have the time.
I know. And I don't even know what camo patterns are out there anymore. If you, I have a storage closet right over there with all my hunting gear in it. You would laugh if you saw half the stuff I wear. Like, I'm talking like the, is old camo pattern. It's brown, yellow, and like a even darker brown, like just spots everywhere.
That's all right.
Like, and I still wear it. Yeah. So it works, and but I have been considering out west that it might be a little bit lighter, and I might need to invest in. So I might need your guys' advice on what to buy.
There you go.
Well, and I feel like those turkeys can pick you out. I mean, no matter what you're wearing, some of those birds are so stingy. Yeah. I mean, you're not even moving, or you don't even blink, and you're like, I don't even know how that thing saw me.
Wasn't that one? Was it 2 years ago when me, you, and your dad were all in that line, and that one got under a tree and you're
yeah
like,
I was under a blowdown and everything. I mean, I was like, this is the best setup I could possibly be, and I mean, this thing came out and 40 yards and he looked right at me and I didn't even move and he was gone.
Isn't that crazy how they do that sometimes?
I know.
And sometimes I don't even know that they see you. It's just they just have it. They're weary
yeah,
animal
they
where they're just like, something's not adding up here and I'm out.
Well, I think I mean, it's so funny because how many times have you heard or saw deer when they're walking and they're like, bink, you know, they're looking up and they pin you. But then there's other deer that just go through it. We rarely hunt from the ground, right? I mean, we see hundreds now. That's like the thing to do. And there's plenty of hunters that are great. But when you think about these turkeys, one, their eyesight's impeccable, like what we're just talking about. But then we're also on their ground level. Like, we're at their level to make difficult, you know, even harder for us.
Yeah, that's where patience, the older I've gotten, I realize that's huge.
Yeah.
Taking your time walking, trying to listen as you're walking and paying attention to your surroundings.
So since you're a phenomenal caller.
I don't know about that.
Do you, when you're going into the whitetail woods, like when it is deer season and you're going after a big buck.
Yeah.
Are you calling, walking in with the turkeys just to kind of break that up a little bit?
You mean if I'm actually hunting deer? What,
yeah, if you're hunting deer, are you with a mouth call?
No, I've never done that.
Yeah.
That'd be something. Mm-hmm. That'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
Now in the fall, if fall turkey's in, I do carry a call with me. And if I usually see a flock in the fall while I'm hunting archery, I'll get it out. Yeah. But I haven't ever had I've never got one.
Because I've talked to some people that like they do that just to kind of, especially if the leaves are really crunchy,
makes sense.
I'm just a shitty game caller when it comes to that. I'd be like, those deer would be like, yeah, that ain't no turkey. I'm out of here.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Might be something I have to
there you go.
Start trying.
You're going to be like, hey, Jeremy Dimitri, I just put one down this buck crest over the nice ridge here and I just blasted him. No, that's cool, man. Trying to think, there was something else. What about gun? What gun are you using?
So I use it's a 12 gauge TriStar, and I've been using that gun since 2010 or 2011. And I was having a hard time back then. I went through like three guns, and I know they were it's not the gun. I just wasn't finding the right choke pattern or choke and shells to get the pattern I was looking for. So my dad actually found a company, Rhino Choke Tubes. They still make chokes, but they were teamed up with TriStar at the time. And I got a hold of them because my dad let me know that they would basically guarantee you a pattern with heavy shot mag blends, Rhino Choke Tube, and this TriStar gun. So that's what I ended up going with, and I've been using it, and it's a good patterning gun, and I'm very confident in it.
Okay.
So, I don't know if I ever told you guys this story. I found a better patterning gun, and I hung this one up on the shelf for one day. Okay. And that was because I got one day to hunt while I was in the academy.
Okay.
very first day of spring gobbler season in 2014, I missed three gobblers that day. On three, I called in three separate gobblers and missed all of them with this gun that it patterns great, but I was like, I've never used that gun since, and it still sits in my gun safe, and I've used that TriStar ever since.
Wow.
I just lost confidence, and I'm confident with that gun.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Now, do you use a red dot or anything?
I just use beads, and I always have. With my daughters, though, I have red dots for them, and they're the thing, and that's what I would use if I wasn't still just confident in using my bead setup, because they're perfect. You hone right in on that gobbler with that red dot, and they do a great job of being my daughters are, you can tell that they're focused on that gobbler with that red dot.
Yeah. You said about pattern. So like dub it down, right?
Oh yeah.
You know, so, like what like when you look at that and you're like, wow, this actually patterned better than my TriStar, but obviously.
Yeah. Know. I don't remember exactly what numbers I was getting with that gun, but my TriStar, now pattern then compared to now with this TSS loads is two different things.
Okay.
But back then I was you're shooting the gun at 40 yards. At least I am. And I think most people are they're shooting it at like a sheet of paper or cardboard, probably 3x3, I would guess. And you figure out your pattern. You look at the cardboard, wherever your most BBs are, you have a 10, like if you take a paper plate is typically about 10 inches round, you circle that and then you start counting all the BBs within that.
Okay.
Within that 10 inch circle and whatever amount that you come up with. So at the time that my TriStar probably gets, I think it's around 220 BBs in a 10 inch circle at 40 yards, which is phenomenal.
Yep.
And that's where I'm comfortable with shooting. I don't really shoot past that. But these guns now with like my daughters are shooting at TSS loads out of a 410, and that 410, they're getting like 150 to 180 BBs out of a 410 at 40 yards with this TSS loads. Now they're 9.5 shot or 10 shot, but it's impeccable. And the weight of them is comparable to, like, don't quote me on this, but like number 9 TSS weight wise is comparable to a number 5 lead.
Okay.
So when they're hitting them, you're getting the impact's the same. So even though it's smaller shot.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I know. Even a lot of adult hunters that are going to the 410 with the TSS just because it's a lighter gun, less of a kick, you know, and it's going to, you know, produce the same.
Yeah.
And I mean, you can get those. I mean, I don't know about now because of inflation, but
$300.
Yeah, like the I know the 4 or 5 years ago, the Stevens 410s. I have one. Was like $199.
I bought one for $180, and that my one daughter still uses it. And then I have three 410s now. So each one has their own, which is completely unnecessary because I can't take them all three
at the same time. Yeah,
and sure, I have to help them, like, you know, aim and whatnot. Like they're in between my legs, and I kind of support the gun as they're aiming.
Yeah.
So now I did find a neat trick last year because a lot of times I think hindering them a little bit as far as I was holding the gun, like they're sitting down here and I'm kind of steering the gun, but I can't really tell what they're aiming at. So what I did was I bought a monopod and I stick it in front. Now, if the gobbler comes within a certain degree, right, you know, they'll be able to shift a gun on that monopod, but it's worked out pretty good so far.
Great.
Yeah. But if they come way off to the side one way or the other, I'm going to have to pick it up off the monopod.
Right. Well, that day we were sighting in our rifles this year, that one guy with his daughter, which she was sighting in with her 350 Legend that was on one of those monopods. And, I mean, same thing, Andrew. It was cool to just watch her go up to it. She just went here, bang. You know what I mean? Yep. It was just such a cool thing. And what you just said, I remember being a youth hunter. My dad, same thing. You know, kind of just, no, you're good. Same thing, just kind of was like slowly moving me,
yeah.
You know, like follow yep. the bird. So.
Yeah, that worked out real well, and that was my first time trying that. The monopod was, and I think I thought of it in the past, but the one I have is about as short as you can get. Now you can extend it,
yeah,
but it was still too high for my younger two daughters.
Okay.
Because even on its low, unless I could jam it down in the ground, you know, mm-hmm. far enough that where it was still, the gun was still sitting too high for them to yeah. get down on.
But. Yeah. So goals going into this season, what is it? What are they?
Goals. Well, I'd be lying if I didn't say that I want to kill a gobbler in every state that I go to, but the goal is to go out there and just have a good time. I enjoy every moment that I'm out there, especially with my daughters, my dad, my mm-hmm. buddies. So as long as we're having a good time, which we always do. So that's the goal. Now on a killing aspect of it, that's not what it's all about, but obviously that's what I'm out there trying to do.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that I would like to, I'm planning on hitting at least 3 or 4 states this year. So it'd be nice to tag one in all of them.
Yeah. 3 or 4 birds.
How many states are you up to?
15.
Okay.
Yeah. I was lucky enough. Delaware was the only state last year that I didn't kill. And Delaware is tough. It's just, there's just not a lot of opportunity unless you have private. That was the only state I didn't kill in last year. And I came extremely close. It was a situation where it was a touch too far, and there ended up being I'm going on a story now,
but no,
there
that's
ended
good.
Up ended up being another hunter in there, and I wasn't sure if he was working those. I wasn't familiar with the area, obviously, and I didn't feel comfortable shooting it if he was already
there,
and it was a touch too far anyway, and it didn't feel right to me, so I went back in there the next couple of days and never got to work them again. But that was the only, I'd ended up shooting 7 gobblers last year. And then, like I said, each of my 3 daughters shot some. I was there from, my dad. He killed one when I was with him. I was there with my brother. He killed one. So I got to, I typically get action, but it's because I'm out there. I'm just relentless, I guess you could say. I just enjoy it so much that I'm going to be hunting if I can.
So you're like, we can go out on a limb and say you're 100% full in, like, you know, that's when it comes to turkey. What would you say is your percentage when it's the whitetails?
Well, early season, like I told you, my oldest daughter has been getting into mm-hmm. archery a little bit. So I take her. I hunt so much in the spring, I almost feel guilty
going out in the fall.
So this is the compromise I have with my wife, and I don't know that she's ever agreed to this compromise. I just this is just me saying this. I always tell her every Halloween you will not see me a whole lot for the next 2 weeks, and that's usually when I'm in the woods, and I do get out as much as I can. I will say I spend a lot, like a couple hours in the morning and a couple hours in the evening. Those days of me with all day sits just don't seem to happen as much anymore, just because something's going on. Mm-hmm. And it's not that I don't enjoy it, I get cold, and maybe I got to get some of this new camo because I'm telling you,
we got to hook them up. We'll figure something out, Andrew.
My dad bought me some heated socks because I'm always complaining that my feet start freezing. And that's, yeah. But yeah, so I haven't tried them out. I got those for Christmas.
Because that was like a thing that I had. You know, like I've enjoyed going out turkey hunting. Last mm-hmm. year, actually, I didn't get out once. Just, you know, I was coaching this year. I'm not, so I plan on coming out a lot.
I knew you said that.
So I'm really excited for this spring. But yeah, when it comes to the whitetail, obviously that's like,
oh, you guys are fanatics about it.
Yeah.
You guys are like,
yeah,
I am for turkey.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Which I'm into, don't get me wrong, I'm into deer hunting.
Well, yeah, I turn around here and I'm looking at this whitetail. Like, you're in the.
Yeah, I don't have anything hanging on my wall like that.
I don't need it.
Oh, shit.
That my focus when I was younger was deer hunting. Okay. But it's in the past 10 years. When I start my very first trip, which I showed you that gobbler that's mm-hmm. mounted out there from my very first trip, from that trip on, I have been addicted to turkey hunting. Yeah. And that was. And I kick myself because the guys in the turkey call company with me, Tony and Tyler, they are always like begging me to go on these turkey. They knew I was a turkey hunter. I mean, I've always been into it. And boy, do I kick myself now for not
going earlier.
Yeah. Because I mean, that's what I look forward to year round. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm like staying awake till 11, 12 o'clock looking on maps, trying to figure out where, and that's half the fun though, because whenever it happens, when you put all that time into it, like you guys know, it's just so rewarding.
Dude, it was rewarding hearing you just say you killed 7 last year like that. Like yeah. To me, like I'm sitting here like, yeah. You know, like as if I was a part of it in a sense. We got to get him to meet Tim.
Mm-hmm.
So
he's a fanatic too.
Yeah.
Oh,
big
yeah.
Turkey fanatic. Tim used to make his own old calls as well.
Nice.
Did
he have a company or just made them for himself and friends?
He did. I think
friends?
He partnered with someone
okay.
Before. We won't say any names. So
yeah.
he did partner with someone in the past, and I think he still has
all the presses,
and all the presses and, yeah. and everything like that. And he goes out west. He's done, you know, I know he's done out west. I know he's done down south. So yeah, we'll have to, next time yeah. he's out here, we'll have to see if you're,
that'd be cool.
Yeah, you're free because he is a fanatic.
Yeah.
Actually, he worked, he helped out at the Tethered booth for the Great American Outdoor Show, and he heard them talking about the new vest they were coming out. Did you see that by chance?
Mm-mm.
I'll have to show you it. So, Tethered, the saddle hunting company,
yep.
they've released a brand new run and gun mobile M2 vest. They worked with the Hunting Public. Basically,
okay.
the M2 stands for like the most modular system. So you could run it with like two different ways. You mm-hmm. could have like a water bladder pack, which is
yeah.
could also hold a ton of gear in the backpack. And then there's a bird bag.
I thought you were going to say beer.
Yeah.
Beer.
Yeah.
Well, it could hold beer too.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, it sure can. And then there's the bird bag that like yeah. cinches down so it's not out back. So, like, you know, the guys from Hunting Public that, you know, they're always yeah, on their go, running and gunning and making sure they had, you know, their needs. And
mm-hmm.
Carl's a wizard when it comes to designing things. I mean, just yeah. he builds his own houses. Like, no one's touching what Carl's doing. So for 2 years, Carl set out to make the best turkey vest possible.
Oh, no way.
So it's this, you know, it's a modular setup. It's kind of like a harness here
yep.
in the front. And then, like I said, there's two different attachments in the back that you could either choose from to run. And it has a weight, belt waist, hip waist.
Yep.
So, yeah. So long story short, he was working this event. And he was like, what do you know that's coming? I'm like, all I know is that there's a turkey vest coming and it'll be released next week at the NWTF. You know, that's nice. All I know. I said, I don't know really what it looks like. He's like, God dang it. He's like, yeah, I'm fired up about, like hearing it and stuff like that. So I'll have to show
yeah,
you, send you some videos great. Of that. But yeah, Tim's a diehard when it comes to turkeys too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm in. I'm almost, you know me, I'm always yeah. down to talk to
I know. There was something too about Pennsylvania that I was trying to muster up, but I can't think about it.
What about, like Jeremy was going to say, tell us a little bit about the calls of, you know,
yeah.
making the calls mm-hmm. and, you know, how maybe a little bit about the process of someone maybe that doesn't know what goes into a diaphragm call and, you know, we'll kind of lead into, you know,
okay.
the different calls, the diaphragm calls you make and, you know, how you come up with like the different cuts and everything, you know,
yeah.
That goes into that.
So I have a couple different presses. The I know everybody can't see it, but these two are the same, and then this one's for making like youth calls, like they're smaller frame. But the standard size, I basically just started out experimenting between like double reeds first. I started mm-hmm. with what was easier. Now Tony's been making my business partner. Mm-hmm. He's been making calls for a long time, and he actually showed me, and we were making them on these mad, I got one right here. It's like a little mad call maker, and we were making them on these for years, and they work. They work great. But as far as reproducing, and they're not, you're not going to get the accuracy on the stretch. So we ended up buying industrial presses and just started experimenting with different reeds. Each, you can buy reeds in different thicknesses and then different colors. And I think the colors actually play into the sounds, believe it or not, as well as the thickness and the stretch. But you just start playing around with the different combinations, and then you start, I started putting different cuts. Like I would lead, I would start with like a split V, a basic cut. Then I'd maybe take one side off and make it into a cutter call. And I just kept experimenting with all the different combinations and cut it down to where I couldn't cut it anymore. And if I didn't, if I found one I liked, you'd see on my notepad here, I just started writing down different tensions and different things that I started liking, and just kept track of it so I could reproduce it. And then I started handing them out to Tony and Tyler and buddies and just saying, hey, let me hear you call on this. Can you reproduce it and good sound out of it? And we never replicated a call until I got like an okay from Tony, Tyler and buddies that, yeah, this is a good call. So then I knew it was user friendly for most people, because I call totally different than Tony and Tyler call. Like, I can't work many calls. It has to be a user-friendly call for me in order to run one. So once I knew, and Tony, he could stick any call in his mouth, and it sounds great. So once we all got on the same page, that's kind of how we all started out. Was I would just keep writing down different combinations, different cuts, and start handing them out to those guys. And that, we ended up, I think we have like a dozen calls now. I'm not sure, but, and just kept handing them out, and that's how it all started.
Yeah, I just know for me, I mean, I always wanted to learn, you know, using a diaphragm call even when I was little, and, you know, started turkey hunting, but I just always struggled with it so much. You know, I had people trying to teach me, and, you know, I think I went to a couple of those like NW, things like that, and people were teaching you and stuff, and I remember I just always never really got it down, you know, too much. So, you know, for me being below average, you know, callers, you know, I've used your calls, you know, multiple times now and killed a couple birds with them the last couple of years. And, you know, and for me, they definitely are user friendly just because, you know, like me, like even I've tried several diaphragm calls, and, you know, like you said, there's some that, you know, I can't even make a sound out of, you know, either. I'm doing the exact same thing that I'm doing with this other call.
Right.
And I'm sounding okay. I never say sound good, you know, but I'm sounding okay and, you know, usable. And then, like, you know, do the same thing with this call, and it's like, I can't even make a sound out of this thing, you know?
And that's how I got started making them, because I thought, boy, I'm going out and I'm spending $8 to $10 or and more now on a call where I might throw it in the garbage 5 seconds after I pop it in my mouth and give it a run. And I just thought, there's got to be, I got to start experimenting and doing my own thing, because it just isn't making sense for me to just keep buying and tossing 10 out of 12, you know,
out into the garbage. Trash. I mean, I will echo exactly what Dimitri said. I mean, for myself, there's time where I know for a fact with your calls, I sound better than even using Slate or anything else.
That's great.
I mean, I remember even a couple of years ago when we were testing them out, and you're like, that actually sounded really good. You know, you know, I can't really, you know, I'm the same way. Like when he shoots his bow, I'm like, holy shit, that thing is quiet. And then like when I shoot my bow, I'm like, to me, it sounds loud because I'm right there in the moment. And he's like, no, that's quiet. You know what I mean? Type of ordeal. And it's the same thing for me. I'm like, now I can't purr. I can't do the cute stuff. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm yelping. Right. That's pretty, you know, but as far as that goes, I do. I actually, you know, that's like great. Dimitri said, and I feel pretty good about them.
That's rewarding to hear because that's the type of, you guys are the ones that maybe you don't, I mean, I practice all the time and I should be a lot better than what I am for how much I call. But a guy that's just popping a call in, you know, right before season and isn't the most experienced, those are the people that I think
and you hit calls that, man. I'm not trying to be a homer and saying in front of your face and in your house like that. I'm being dead serious. Like we could actually,
that was the goal.
Yeah.
That was my goal, because it all started out. I am so obsessed about turkey hunting. I love hearing people's success stories. Not so much like, I like hearing, hey, this call works, so they start using our calls because you guys are having success with them. But then I get to hear the story that somebody killed a gobbler with something that I made. And it's just so rewarding to hear that.
Yeah. What's your go-to?
The Black Widow. Yeah, it's a triple reed call. It's kind of like a bat wing style cut, a little bit unique cut in it. It's kind of like rectangles, but that one's my favorite. And I've been working with a new ghost cut call that I haven't even marketed yet or anything. Mm-hmm. It's just something I tried out last weekend at a calling contest that I went to, and I really liked it.
Yeah, you guys won, right?
I took first in the amateur division, and then I placed sixth in the open division.
Okay.
So, yeah, it was there. When you go to those, you're competing against like some of the top guys in the nation. So the competition is there. I mean, no doubt. But I left there. That's only the second one I've ever done. And I'm sure I'll probably do more in the future. But I didn't feel I gave my best performance, which made me feel even better about it, because I know maybe, hey, if I would have done a little bit better, maybe I could have placed a little bit better in the open. Or
right.
It gave me – I know there's room to improve.
Heck yeah.
So, yeah.
I like it.
What about, you know, the life of a call, right? You know, like when do you think, you know, maybe
that's
you should get a new one, like whether you like that call and you want the exact same thing, you know? Because I've heard people say, well, you should change them up yearly, or, you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, if you're going to use that season after season, what is your suggestion in terms of that?
I run calls so much that I'm switching them out like monthly, but I'm not your typical.
You're a different level.
Yeah. So I actually think for an average person that is calling, you know, just in hunting season and practicing a little bit before, I think you could hang on to a turkey call. And this isn't smart of me to say, because I'm in this business of selling turkey calls, but a couple of years, as long as at the end of the season, you're rinsing them off and clean. Like I always dip them in Listerine and wash them off with water, tap water. And then I'll let them dry and then air dry. And then I'll stick them in the fridge and Tyler, I think, sticks his in the freezer. But either one, and like the butter dish. So whenever you open up the butter dish to get something, they all fall out on the ground. Your wives will like that.
Yeah.
But that's where I put mine. And, so I could get a couple seasons easily. Mm-hmm. What I find, because I have the habit of leaving a call in my mouth all the time when I'm hunting, and the tape, the stickiness will start separating the tape, and that usually causes me not to get as good of a seal. And that's not just with like our calls here at Hunting Hole. That's been throughout my life before I even started making them. That's just what happens. And so, I think you could get a couple seasons if you take care of it. Now, if you leave it in the sun or in your car, it's gonna dry rot and not sound as good. But I think some of the calls that you've broke in for a year or two might be your best sounding calls, you know, coming year three.
If you're taking care of them, like you said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think is the biggest mistake people that use diaphragm calls makes?
Calling too much. Okay. That would be my opinion. There's a time and a place, and I know we touched on this earlier. I try to read the gobbler before I... If I'm not hearing something, I don't want to be a hypocrite and say this, but I'll start out usually slow. But before I leave that spot, like if I'm doing just some plain yelps or I'm doing some clucking and I'm not hearing anything, before I leave that spot, you best believe that, unless I'm planning on walking the rest of the way out this ridge, you know what I mean? But if I'm just stopping in an area to call and that's what I'm doing, I'm cranking on that call at the end to try cutting and maybe and calling loud, maybe I can reach out to something or fire something up, or maybe that's what something wanted to hear was, you know? So that's my strategy usually but calling too much, I think is a problem that will hang up a gobbler. And I've learned that through my own trial and error, you know?
Yep.
And I have, So last time I was in Mississippi, when I said I was calling to that gobbler that was on private ground, there was a, I'm assuming he was a local. He had a southern draw to him, and he ended up coming over to me because the gobbler was responsive to me. And I don't know if he was on that private or if he was on the public or if he was just happening through the area, but he said, yeah, you all call too much. And so I thought, well, maybe he's right. I don't know. But the gobbler was gobbling. So yeah. I was trying everything to get it to come over onto the public. I don't know.
I remember that time a couple of years ago when we were by the fire tower, me, you, and your dad, and we thought we were working a gobbler and it was another hunter. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were like, it took us what, 25 minutes till we were finally like, that's another hunter.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was good stuff. What are must haves in that vest? What are like at all times do you have with you? Even like counting call, like obviously mm-hmm. your calls, what kind of calls, or do you got a, you just doing the owl hall, like who, like mouth, do you have like, what's in your vest?
So, I always have a slate call.
Okay.
I don't use it very often, but I do use it from time to time. A powell mouth calls, obviously. Crow call. Mm-hmm. I usually do the owl hoot. I do have one in my vest, but I rarely use it. I'll do it with
Dimitri's
my natural voice.
Is really good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know about that.
Obviously, a lot of shells. I take a box call. I like being able to reach out there on a box call. And a lot, I have this knee pad that I've just carried around forever. And really, I always try to get it on my knee to set my gun and rest it on because it feels like the bottom of where the ejection or mm-hmm. yeah, the port is, mm-hmm. It seems like it's always digging into my knee. So it's just habit. I always put that on, not necessarily because I need it, but it's just,
yeah.
It's kind of comfortable. And now it's almost like a good luck,
yeah.
you know, for yeah. me. And, but as long as I have mouth calls, I'm good to go. Like that's normally what I have and normally what I'm running.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what else. I used to carry around a bread bag to, simulate, like some guys will carry around a turkey wing or just flap their hat on their leg. But there was a bread bag I saw somebody do one time and they just kind of kept pulling it and it sounded like wings flapping. So I carried one of those around for a while. But the biggest thing with that vest is that I'm telling you that frame so I can sit back and relax whenever there's not a tree available or, you know, I don't want to cause a whole lot of movement.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, I don't carry a whole lot of stuff.
Mm. How was your whitetail season?
Not bad. My daughter, my youngest shot her first buck.
Nice.
So with the rifle, I think it was the last day. No, second to last day. It was on Friday. And then, I ended up shooting one in with the rifle.
Yep.
Nothing to brag home about. I got my triple trophy this year because I shot a bear, I shot a gobbler
nice.
In the fall, and then I wanted to be able to say I shot the triple trophy.
I remember you actually now sending me that message about the triple trophy. So now that I remember that, yeah. Well, you said you were after a big one. You didn't get a chance to get a crack at him, but you were after another big one this year.
Yeah. Rumor has it got poached.
Yeah. We saw a picture and video of him. Man, he was a doozy.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. What, it's kind of depressing.
Do you go out much? Like, when you're out here scouting for turkey, do you go out and, like, mark things when you see whitetail sign? And
I do, yeah. I'm always marking on Onyx. That's the app I use.
Yeah.
And I'm always, anytime there's turkey sign or I almost get confused because I can't even keep track of it. But I think you can keep notes and different things, but I'm not the best with doing that stuff. But if I have a pin somewhere, I know there's a reason. If it's a turkey on there, okay, there's something. So, I'm always using it. That's such a good tool. I mean, I know everybody's using it. And I've said this before. I almost wish we'd go back to not having them because it's so easy now. That it's a tool for everybody.
Yeah.
And people that normally wouldn't spend the time getting maps and everything, they have access right at their fingertips.
Well,
then it's helped me immensely. I'm not
I mean, same here. I mean, now I'm like, oh, you know, there's a thermal hub. Like, I know actually what the hell that is because of being able to listen to podcasts and look at these maps and everything like that. And, you know, I'm actually, you know, I don't know. It's just, like you said, it's, you know, look at Kansas right now. Kansas is banning trail cameras.
Yep.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Yep.
I just saw that.
Wow.
So they're like, hey, no one come here and hunt anymore. Applications were up like 100% last year. So I don't know what their game. I don't know if that's like why or what, but.
Yeah. I mean, that's like one thing, like you said, like the online tool, like if they ban trail cameras, like obviously we want to protect hunting, but like, I wouldn't mind that. You know what I mean? Like I hunt in the fall off fresh sign and, you know, and I like the surprise and I'm never hunting one specific buck,
you know?
So I wouldn't mind it. And, you know, I think that would give me more of an advantage versus some people out in the woods that rely on them and, you know, try to use that. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, if it's a tool that's legal, I'm going to use it and try to make my odds better. But, you know, if they banned it, but the problem is I worry about them doing this, you know, more for a political standpoint than it is like the actual game commission wanting, you know, protecting other hunters. You are they trying to, you know, it's hard for them to ban hunting, right? I feel like there's such a group that they would have a hard time just like saying, hey, hunting's illegal. So what they do is if they can create less hunters and, you know, implement bills that's going to cause less hunters and, you know, less revenue to that, is that how their way in to, you know, limit hunting for us? It's hard to say, right? Yeah. You know, it's decisions that as hunters we have to make what's best for us.
It's the same thing right now in Iowa. I mean, I don't know to the T, and I don't want to misspeak on it, but I mean, it's the same thing. They're trying to do something along the lines of like with the crossbow. I think it's a crossbow season and an air bow or something like that. It's, you know, like a company in New York is basically paying lobbyists for like, you know, political people in Iowa to just pass this law. And it's like, whoa, no.
Yeah.
You know, type of ordeal. It's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I know Iowa's a state that I would love to hunt for whitetail. Yeah. I'm sure you guys would.
Yeah.
I guess you have to – it's a point system. Takes a few years to accumulate.
So right now as we speak, I'm on 3 points.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah. So
I have a buddy that's going next year. What is it, 5 points?
Yeah.
You're pretty much guaranteed.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if point creep if unfortunately for your buddy, like if five, I mean, we had like what we said earlier, our friend Tim and Tom, they were pretty much almost like 100% for a mule deer hunt last year.
Didn't get it.
0%. They didn't get it. So it's like you hear,
right.
Well, you know, the same thing too for like Kansas. Like I have 2 points for Kansas. Now, luckily for like some of these states, Kansas, Iowa, Iowa obviously still is it's you don't have to buy any license or anything like that. It's $50, right? So you put $50. I think Kansas is 30, I believe.
Okay.
But, you know, again, I don't have, like, if I want to put in a point for Colorado, I have to buy some license and other things like that. So it ends up being pricey.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when it comes to this time, I'm on a budget, right? Like, like, there's certain things where I allot money for and to do. And, a 50 and 30, like, oh, I'm less than $100 for quote unquote points for things I want to hunt. When it gets more than that, I have to, you know, put in basically watch what I'm doing. But long story short, I mean, I have 2 for Kansas and people say like, oh, I draw every year. Oh, I draw every other year or something along those lines. And I know, like I said, last year's applications were up like a lot and there was a lot more pressure last year. So I wonder if that has anything to do with it. I mean, probably not, but you know, like Dimitri said, who knows with, you know, the way things go in the government sometimes.
Right. Yeah. I can tell you there's states that I've hunted for turkey 10 years ago. And I looked at Tony and I said, are you sure it's the first day here? Because we didn't see anybody. We went back to that same state 4 years later and it was like there were people everywhere.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. It's weird. Like there's, I see, like Dimitri said, they're legal here. There's aspects of trail cameras that I really like and enjoy and utilize them for.
Yep.
But like you said, to rely on them.
Yeah, I don't either.
It's that once you do, it burns you, man.
Yep.
I felt that.
Yeah, I agree.
Sweet, man. Well, Andrew, I can't wait to see what the hell, how many birds you kill this year. So, I mean, as a whole, I think I was counting between you and your daughters and, like you said, your brother and your dad, you're probably up to like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And you throw in your buddies, you're probably up to 20. So, I mean.
Yeah. I was fortunate. It was a good season last year, not to tell her, tell everybody to come here or toot my own horn. It just worked out. Now, I didn't kill all those gobblers here in PA. Those were all different states. Yeah. But, it was a great year. And hopefully I can – I don't know. We'll see what happens. Mississippi is going to be a tough one.
Yeah, get after it, man. So you – real quick before we get off, you've done the Grand Slam.
Correct, yeah.
Do you have any desire to do it again?
Yeah, I'm after that U.S. Slam, and basically that's the 49 states, excluding Alaska, where there's no
Turks.
Yeah, but I didn't start wanting to do that until like 2 or 3 years ago. I've always just wanted to I just want to hunt. I don't care if it's an Eastern, I don't care if it's a Merriam, I don't care if it's an Osceola. I just want to hunt turkey. And I'm still that way, but now it's like it's kind of a cool goal to try to achieve. I don't know if I'll ever get it, but
yeah,
try for it.
Hell, man, at least you're seeing the country. You're seeing all this beautiful,
that's the other thing.
What's out there, right?
That's the other
adventure
thing. Yep, exactly.
I might become a turkey hunter, Dimitri. Just so I could say we're going here, we're going maybe there. You know? No, man. Well, Andrew, I appreciate you opening up your house to Dimitri and I.
Thanks for coming.
And talking hunting and indulging us with the old turkey talk. And last year we didn't do any turkey episode basically, so this was a pleasure to talk. It gets me fired up. I'm ready to hit some mouth calls in the car on the drive home. So
yeah,
I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Where could people go check out your calls and follow along with what you guys are doing?
Honeyholegamecalls.com is our website, and then we're on Instagram. It's honeyholegamecalls, also on Facebook. And then our email is honeyholecalls@gmail.com.
Okay. And if you check out if you're in the central Pennsylvania area, like I'm not talking Harrisburg, I'm talking more like State College, that Center County region. You guys do a lot of shows, like you did the Altoona Outdoor Show this weekend is the Clearfield one.
We'll be at Clearfield this week.
Obviously, this won't air in time for that to all that jazz. But I mean, if you guys see anything local that are local listeners, if you see that Double H on there, go,
that'd be cool,
check out Andrew, what his buddies are doing. So
that'd be great.
Yeah, appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you.
Thanks again, everybody, for tuning in. We'll see you next week. Antler up.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.